Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Dr. Donald Stern, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District, joins us again this morning. Dr. Stern, it is always a great opportunity and a chance to talk to you. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ted. Good morning to you. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. The week in some way kind of goes a little faster. I couldn't believe when I got up this morning and thought this is a Dr. Stern morning. It doesn't seem like we that long ago we talked, but it was a week ago and a pretty eventful week in the last few days in this area, especially yesterday. A number of interesting stories came out.
Yeah, it has been an interesting week. Yesterday we had the highest single day rise in the number of new COVID-19 reported positive cases. We announced the outbreak, which actually started the day before at an Aldi store in Spotsylvania County, and we had two deaths yesterday. So it was a difficult day for all of us.
Boy, I bet. Let's start with the numbers first, just because it had been the day before. I know there had been 13 new cases, and then and then jumped up. But if you looked at the numbers statewide as far as testing went, the numbers when it jumped up here statewide, the testing numbers more than doubled. And I wondered if there's any correlation in that.
Well, there you go, Ted. Very insightful of you. We suspect that the increased number of positive COVID-19 cases that were reported yesterday may simply be a function of the increased capacity for laboratory testing, and that lots more people are now getting testing. So that's our hope. I can't really tell you for sure. So that's one of the reasons why the key or the best indicator for what direction this disease is going is following the hospital admission data.
And we had talked about and I've been watching that all week too, Ed, and because that had been something we did talk about last week, and that I guess kind of gives you the indication of what's going on by watching those hospital numbers.
Well, and the reason why is because when people become severely ill or critically ill, guess what? They are probably going to end up in the hospital somewhere. We've had almost 90 hospitalizations in our health district. I should say that most of those folks are recovered and have gone home, except for those few who've been overcome by the illness. And those who are in treatment now, we have, about 22 folks in the area still in the hospital under treatment or in the recovery process.
And that jumped yesterday too, with the numbers really everywhere. They jumped up, whether it was the testing, the positive cases, and I think the hospital admissions jumped up by about six yesterday.
Right. So Ted, this points to the fact that COVID-19 is still here. So it raises the question: where are you, or better said, where are your listeners? Are they continuing to social distance? Are they continuing to provide safety for the elderly and those who have underlying medical conditions? Who are the most vulnerable? Who are the ones that are going to suffer from the more severe form of this illness? Where are you, or where are your listeners?
Well, and that's an interesting question, Dr. Stern, because I was going to say to you, and I had noticed, especially last weekend and through the week, when I would go home or go places in the afternoons, it's been for the last 6-8 weeks. It's been a breeze getting through, but this week especially, you start noticing a lot more cars, and you start seeing a lot more people in shopping centers. So you start to wonder, are people starting to come out more?
Well, I think that's a fair statement. I drive to Fredericksburg twice a week. So I come into town and I see this, I kind of have this gauge with the degree to which people are out and about. And when I started this job about 7 weeks ago now, the streets were empty. Mm-hmm. There was hardly anybody on the roads. And gosh, yesterday and even Tuesday, it was very busy. It almost looked like normal traffic to me. I think we need to raise the question, where are you? Are you social distancing? This coronavirus is still here.
And that's the thing, as things start opening up, we can't lose focus of that.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
I guess this is as good a time as any. We'll talk about this throughout the show. But there are things that we can do. We can be out and we can get around when we have to. But there are things that we know about how the disease is spread and really how we need to act.
Well, we've been over that and over that, Ted. I guess every conversation you and I have had.
We do.
And I think it's fair to remind your listeners that this is an infectious disease. It is transmitted. COVID-19 is transmitted from person to person or off contact surfaces, from person to person, primarily by respiratory droplets that with coughing or singing or speaking, that those droplets travel through the air and then have contact with the mucous membranes, mouth, nose, eyes of the next person, and that person then becomes infected. Again, I've said it's not this monster that's going to drop out of the sky or crawl out from underneath your bed. It's an infectious disease. It's person to person. Or when that person who has the disease coughs on their hand, touches a doorknob, the next person coming along picks up the virus on their hand and touches their face, and they can easily contract the disease. So it's still here. It's for most folks, still, the data is pretty clear that most folks handle this disease fairly well. About 80% of it is asymptomatic or mild to moderate disease. But those folks who are more elderly, 65 years of age and older, and those who have underlying medical conditions, heart disease, pulmonary disease, diabetes, folks who have some kind of immune compromised condition, such as those on cancer chemotherapy, they're at risk for having the more severe form of this disease. About 60% of the folks in our community who have had COVID-19 have been over the age, the severe form, been over the age of 60.
Dr. Donald Stern here this morning with the Rappahannock Area Health District. When we come back, we're going to talk about the first outbreak in the community, as we mentioned at the start. And we'll talk about what that meant and how the health district handled that. More coming up on News Talk 1230 WFVA. We will be right back.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Miss an episode of Town Talk? No problem. Just subscribe to the Town Talk podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Music. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubert.
Dr. Donald Stern joins us this morning with the Rappahannock Area Health District as we talk about their work in the area and just kind of look at everything that's going on. The numbers and in what you have to follow each day and your staff does, it's remarkable, Dr. Stern. And it's, again, thank you for what you all do in the community.
Well, we have a number of what I call the hidden heroes who are out there trying to battle against this disease by employing our public health strategies to do so.
Before we move on, you wanted to correct something or a statistic you just gave a second ago?
Yeah. I mentioned that 60% of those who had severe illness were over the age of 60. That's not true. I wasn't reading my stats correctly. 60% of those who have died have been over the age of 60.
Oh, okay. Okay.
In our health district.
And again, we now have what 11. You mentioned that the one got report will figure into the numbers today. But 11 now in the Rappahannock Area Health District have passed away from COVID-19.
Right. That's as of our report from yesterday. I've not seen the numbers from today yet. Staff are working those up and producing their daily report for me on that right now.
We yesterday had the first outbreak, and we up until yesterday that was kind of the big news of the day. And describing is when we have talked about this before, that there had not been of an outbreak is multiple cases but not from a household.
No, not necessarily. An outbreak is the way we define an outbreak is two or more cases of a disease that you otherwise would not expect.
Oh, okay.
In a particular geographic setting. So, two cases of measles in a school would be an outbreak, or two cases of tuberculosis in a jail would be an outbreak. In this case, it was a place of employment. It's public notice known now that Aldi grocery store, one of the Aldi grocery stores in Spotsylvania County, had several employees who tested positive for COVID-19.
So walk through what happens when you get that report and how the health department handles that.
Well, the trigger for our action is really the positive test results, which I think I've mentioned earlier to you in our previous conversations, that all physicians, all medical providers, and all laboratories are required to report those positive laboratories to the state health department and their local health department. So we find out about the positive laboratory report, and then we do what's called a case investigation. We've identified the case, then we interview the individual who had the positive test result. And the purpose for that is to try to find out where they may have gotten the disease, but also who else may be at risk for transmission of disease. And in this case, in the workplace, with several employees, it became obvious we had an outbreak in that setting. And so we isolated all those folks, gave them instructions about isolating at home. None of them are in the hospital as of yet, at least as far as I know right now. Isolated them at home, the positive cases, and then the other employees in the workplace who we determined through our investigation were at high risk for transmission of disease, not just passing them in the hallway or, you know, working in the same building, but it has to do with extensive 10-15 minutes of close contact exposure. Those folks are then advised to be quarantined. That is for 14 days. Go home, monitor your temperature, monitor your symptoms, and report back to us or your provider. Medical provider, if there's any change. So we advise them on that, and then we monitor that over the next couple of weeks, both those who are isolated and those who are quarantined. I will tell you that the store took what we would consider the necessary steps to react in these regards. They closed up and did extensive cleaning in the facility. Cleaned off, of course, contact surfaces and all their registers. They've implemented a one-way aisle. I think many people have probably seen that in different stores now, mm-hmm. where you go one way in the aisle. They require their employees to wear masks, and they are offering paid leave to their sick employees so that they can stay home from work.
And again, this is the first of the first outbreak that you've dealt with in the community. And we've talked before about how you've been working with nursing homes, with training and information, with jails, with the homeless. I'm guessing that commercial stores like all the grocery stores and all, that they've at least gotten information from you and know how to proceed in these cases.
Well, certainly the long-term care centers, all the jails homeless community, and we're starting to work now with a low-income Hispanic community, trying to find where those folks are, make sure they've got information about COVID-19 in their language. But I do want to note, Ted, what difference does it make if there's an outbreak at Aldi? Why are we even talking about that right now? I think it, for the community and for your listeners, it really highlights the point that they need to continue to follow the precautions that we've been talking about, especially when they're out shopping. They need to continue social distancing, keeping their washing their hands frequently, using hand sanitizer, wearing their mask to protect not just themselves, but to protect others. Remember, a substantial amount of this disease is asymptomatic or mild to moderate disease, so you could carry it in somewhere and not even know it.
Boy, and that is the thing. After talking to you last week, my wife heard the interview, and she got me some hand sanitizer that I carry now in my car. So when I'm pumping gas or if I'm in a situation, I've got hand sanitizer, a little case of a hand sanitizer in my car.
That's a great idea. You know, ought to put a dab on your hands before you go in the store, and as soon as you come out and put stuff in your trunk or whatever, put a little dab on your hands as you get back in the car. That's a great idea.
Well, I got it from you, and I thank you from that. And again, and it does point out that even when things slowly start to reopen, or the weather's nice, or you see more people out, like you say, you've got to still be diligent in doing all of these things, because the coronavirus is here. It's here, and it continues to move about.
Yes, it's going to be around for a while, Ted. Sorry to say that, but it's going to be around a while. But, you know, the governor is considering now starting to back off on some of the more extreme measures that have been put into place. I think right now we're looking at a May 8th date, but he will make a more formal announcement in those regards in the near future. And I think everybody's looking forward to that. You know, we've gone through. This disease is not just impacting people from an infectious disease point of view, but also it's, you know, we've talked about the fear and the anxiety it's created in our community. And I think there's a bit of anger out there, too. And people want to go back to work. They want their normal lives back. So and I'm sure the governor and all his staff are aware of that and wish for that to happen, especially when you look at the impact on our economy.
Yeah.
This is going to have a long term impact our economy, and much less, some of these more emotional responses to this condition right now.
And like you say, we don't have to fear going out, but we still need to do the right things. In the whole question of where are you, and just make sure that you're in a position and have the hand sanitizer and be aware of not touching your face. And we can get around and do the social distancing and still move around and still be safe.
Yes, right. So if people understand how this disease is transmitted, they can apply reasonable practicality in protecting themselves and protecting others. And I appeal to folks to be mindful of others who are elderly and those who have underlying disease. Stay away and let them stay at home. They should stay at home. They should not be getting out right now. Let this disease go through the community, will at some point achieve what's called a high degree of herd immunity. That is a large percentage of our community will become immune, and that will protect us from further spread or outbreak of this disease. But that's still going to be down the road sometime. And, you know, we're all anticipating a vaccine being available. That's still going to be some time down the road.
It'll be interesting, just to sort of on a side note, when a vaccine is available, because we talk about just the regular flu and how sometimes controversial a vaccine is for that. Just, I mean, I think when a vaccine comes, I think all of us are going to want that. It'll be interesting to see down the road if things change in whether feelings about, you know, getting flu shots, whether more people after this will be more open to just getting a regular flu shot.
Well, that's an interesting question. Excuse me, Ted. I expect that people are becoming more aware of the opportunity for them individually to take responsibility for their health and also take some responsibility for the health of others and practice these good prevention strategies.
Dr. Donald Stern, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District, in with us this morning. More coming up. We will continue this conversation when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It is now 8:29.
I had the radio on. I'm listening to
Talk Done Right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. You can weigh in about today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, your host, Ted Schubel.
Dr. Donald Stern, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District, our guest this morning as we talk about all of this that is going on. As we talk about COVID-19 around the region and around the state and around the world, Dr. Stern, one of the things, I guess, to emphasize and to focus in on, and you've talked about the statistics, that still, by and large, if you get this disease and you're not in some of the high-risk areas, You generally cycle, it cycles through and you're okay.
Yes, as I said earlier, Ted, most folks handle this disease fairly well and recover. You know, it's not all about counting those who have positive disease and hospitalized and death. We've had 11 deaths in our area. So 98% of folks with COVID-19 in our area have basically recovered from this disease. For most people with COVID-19, the duration of this illness is 7 to 14 days. And in the Rappahannock Area Health District, which is Plenty District 16, those individuals who have experienced onset of COVID-19 more than 2 weeks ago have all recovered. All those folks have recovered except for those few who were overcome by the illness. For those who've acquired COVID-19 in the last couple of weeks, the last 2 weeks, most are isolated at home and recovering. And there are, about 22 folks in the hospital right now who are currently undergoing treatment and or recovering. There have been 11 deaths due to COVID-19 in our area. 11 out of a known, 475 test positive individuals. I'm sorry, 11 out of 475. So in other words, that's 2% of the known test positive individuals have died, which means 98% have recovered or are recovering. But keep in mind, That 98% is calculated on or based on test positive cases. 80% of this disease, 80% of COVID-19, is asymptomatic, mild or moderate in nature. Thus, we estimate that there have been over 2,000 cases of COVID-19 in our district, which would represent a much lower case fatality rate and even a little bit higher recovery rate if you do the math.
Interesting. When you talk about that and you put it into that perspective, it really does emphasize what we you know, how we started this, that, you know, the most people after a couple of weeks do recover.
Right. Yes, sir.
The health district and the work that you're doing among a number of different groups is worth talking about in focusing on, because boy, the Rappahannock Health District, we've seen what this disease has done when it's gotten into nursing homes, when it's gotten into jails, and with the homeless in some other states and some other areas. You have really worked hard to try to prevent that from happening here.
Sure, Ted. You know, the classic public health approach to communicable disease and preventing the spread of disease in our community is not throwing an antibiotic at it, not trying to treat it, but trying to prevent its spread. So for all of those 475 cases of test positive COVID-19, our staff have contacted those individuals, done an investigation through interview with them, tried to find out who their contacts are that may be at risk for transmission of disease, and then we've contacted them. I have about 20 staff who do this every day. Even on weekends, we're doing our investigations and case contact workup. But in addition to that, we have a call center that people who have questions or issues about this disease can call and find out more about where testing may be available or just have general questions about COVID-19. We have an active public relations and communications branch that is trying to make sure the information is getting out about COVID-19. And that folks understand how this disease might impact them and may impact their family and this community. We've been paying particular attention to long-term care centers. There are 21 long-term care centers in our region. We've contacted every one of them, helped them walk through an extensive what we call risk assessment. It's a questionnaire that determines the degree to which there may be risk for transmission of disease in their facility. Has a lot to do with their preparation for an outbreak or an incident in their facility, looking at their availability and proper use of personal protective equipment, their knowledge and ability to employ disease transmission prevention in their facility, so on and so forth. And we've walked through that with them. We've done training for them, particularly around what's called fit testing for N95 masks, so that they know they can train their staff and how to properly put on a mask. We've providing ongoing advice for these folks for the long-term care centers, and we're standing up what we call a strike team for long-term care centers. That is, let's say one of our long-term care centers does have an outbreak, mm-hmm. which means more than two cases in a long-term care center. And depending on the size of the center and if that disease starts to spread amongst the residents or the staff, we can stand up immediately this strike team, which is made up of our staff, our Medical Reserve Corps volunteers, and folks from Mary Washington Hospital or Mary Washington Healthcare who can immediately respond and provide not only increase testing capability, but provide advice to the long-term care center, and then also be on site to help triage their residents, determine whether there's a medical need that needs to be addressed immediately, whether those folks need to be isolated either in the facility or be transported. We'll be working with our local governments, emergency services folks in these regards. And also, if it looks like one of our facilities is really blowing up, the National Guard is available. The National Guard is immediately available. They have organized five teams in the state of Virginia, and they'll come and help out as well. So I feel like we're pretty prepared in case we have a long-term care center outbreak so that we can mitigate the spread of disease in one of those centers and protect the health and lives of the residents and staff. That same strategy could be used in a jail. Mm-hmm. It could be used in a homeless shelter. So we're prepared to respond in those cases as well.
But the coordination, as you described, all the different moving parts you've got there, it's incredible. There's a lot of planning, and a lot of, like you said, that you try to stay ahead of this, and this is one of the ways you do it.
Yes, sir. It's trying to anticipate who's next.
You know? Yeah,
and we don't necessarily have control of that because there are so many people who may be asymptomatic or with mild disease. But it's really important to remind folks, if you're sick, stay home. and one of the curious things about this illness, we talk about those who get severe illness, but this disease, COVID-19 disease, can start as a very subtle illness with a mild cough. A lot of people think they just got a cold, or maybe it's their hay fever or allergies kicking in. Next thing they know, their fever may be going up. They're feeling a little achy, and then they lose their appetite, and then they get tested, and it becomes positive. So it can start very subtle. If you're sick, stay home. If you have an unusual cough, you think your allergies are kicking in, think twice.
Yeah, boy, you can't emphasize that enough. Stay home, because in so many cases it's been that situation where someone has talked about, I thought it was allergies, in those couple of days that they were out in any kind of in circulation, who knows how many people then were affected.
Exactly, they could easily be spreading disease and not know it.
When you were talking, Dr. Stern, just a second ago about just the people that are involved with your office, with the case contact people, I guess you get calls then from either individual doctors or from Mary Washington, or when someone has been tested and they test positive, then you get names and then go from there?
Yes, right. We get contact information, and which is, for us, it's a phone. And we do a substantial amount of our work over the phone, and sometimes with the use of the internet and emailing. Our folks don't have their hands on individuals with COVID-19, but I'll tell you, our staff, unlike anybody else, knows every one of these patients. We've had contact with every one of them, unless, I know that there have been a few cases where we've called and called and called for 3 days and haven't been able to get a hold of someone. In one case, it turned out to be somebody who was in the hospital, couldn't quite answer their cell phone. But our staff are very rigorous with trying to find these folks and do so that we can complete the investigation and find those individuals who may be at risk and advise them and guide them in proper quarantine measures.
And I guess when you're going through, and when we talk about quarantine and isolate and all of that, you're giving them and their families all the really basic information about how they need to live their lives for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and that's for a lot of folks, that's difficult. When you tell them they have for isolation, it's stay in your room, do not go out to the kitchen, do not share bathroom facilities if that's at all possible in your home. And that goes on until we can discontinue the isolation, which is generally 7 days from the onset of illness and 3 days after the fever disappears without any use of fever medicine or antipyretics, and that the symptoms decreasing as well. Now, I know there are some providers who are using laboratory testing as a test of cure. The CDC guidelines do not provide for that, we can remove folks from isolation by monitoring their symptoms and their fever.
When do they get tested again at the end to make sure that it's out of their system?
No, that's my point. The standards for care do not provide for follow-up testing, or what I call test of cure.
And I guess you still don't know that after you have it, if you do have an immunity, or for how long you have an immunity.
Well, there is some research now that, of course, since we're several months down the road worldwide on this disease, there have been some efforts to try to determine the immune response. And it does appear that with this COVID-19, immunity starts to develop fairly early on in the disease. Within 5 to 7 days, there seems to be an immune response that develops into what appears to be a protective level. How long that lasts, we do not know. Knowing about other coronaviruses, that immune response may be lasting and protective as well. I did have an interesting conversation with one provider yesterday about his doing a test of cure. What's happening is a lot of people want the test to know that they're COVID-19 free now, rather than just following the CDC and VDH guidelines regarding the reduction of fever and the reduction of symptoms. They want a test. Well, one of these tests came back positive after being out of the hospital for a couple of weeks. Now what do you do?
Yeah. Well, you're right.
Well, you know, my advice was that when the test is positive, that means that person is potentially infectious.
Yeah.
And needs to be quarantined still. And we would quarantine them for 14 days and have them monitor their temperature and their symptoms, of course.
Dr. Donald Stern, the acting director of the Rappahannock Area Health District, is here. We will wrap this up when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Hi, this is...
Opinions. We've all got them. And we'd like to hear yours on Town Talk. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Dr. Donald Stern, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District, with us this morning. Before we get out of here, we were talking about the work that you do with you've done with nursing homes, and you also mentioned that you've in the past with us about jails and the homeless, also an area that you're involved with.
Yes, yeah, because jails have large number of people and closed space. It is a facility we would consider at risk for transmission of disease, and therefore we've done reached out to all of our jails, correctional institutions. There's an ICE or facility in Caroline County that we've also reached out to try to determine their readiness in case of a COVID-19 event in their facility. So we're doing a risk assessment with them, trying to determine the degree to which they have proper personal protective equipment and understanding of infection control measures, cleaning surfaces, so on and so forth. And also, we've had a project going on now for about 2 weeks to provide and assure that folks who are homeless or under-resourced, being discharged from the hospital, have a place to go that is safe for them and safe for others. Hopefully today we'll be finalizing that strategy and determining where folks will be placed and how all that gets paid for. And it's a wonderful cooperative relationship between Mary Washington Hospital and the folks in the homeless shelter community, being led by the regional district commission to come up with a strategy and a plan. So I'm real encouraged by that, and I think I mentioned earlier the undocumented non-citizen, low-income Hispanic population,
yeah,
who may not want to talk to us anyway,
right? Know?
But. If they live in close quarters, they're at risk for transmission of disease. We're developing information in Spanish, making sure that this information is available to those communities as well.
But as you talk about this, and this is going to be a long, ongoing kind of process of continuing to work and educate and talk about this because, unfortunately, without a vaccine, this is the threat of this will continue.
Well, it will, and that's a good point, Ted. But I want to assure folks, as difficult as it has been with these extreme measures put in place, they have been effective. I know it's hard to measure events that don't happen. You know, one of the things that we suffer from in the prevention community is how do you measure events that don't happen because we prevented them? And in this case, I am quite convinced that these measures that have been put in place have prevented the spread of COVID-19. Not totally. We haven't stopped it. It's still going to do its thing. But we've kept it from overwhelming our community, overwhelming the hospital. You don't see happening in Virginia what happened in Italy, where people were lining the hallways in the hospitals, unable to get medical treatment. That's not happening. If folks get severely ill with this disease in Virginia, they can get medical treatment. So these measures we put in place to reduce the spread of disease have protected the vulnerable. And we can't back off too quickly because this virus will then will create the opportunity for individuals, since it's person-to-person spread, to interact more. Therefore, the virus will have an opportunity to move from person-to-person more and risk our community for spread of disease. So let's end by asking the question, where are you? The COVID-19 virus is still here. Where are you?
I need to be at least 6 feet away from you, and I need to be home a lot if I can, I guess, would be one of the answers.
Yes, and we're all anxiously awaiting to hear the guidance from the governor's office in regards to how we can start backing off on these public policies now and opening up our economy, opening up our businesses, being able to go back to work, being able to go back to school. I encourage you to stay away from grandma still. She's elderly and those with underlying medical conditions are still vulnerable if they have not had this disease.
Dr. Donald Stern, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District. Dr. Stern, as always, again, thank you so much. And thank you for your staff. As you have described what the Rappahannock Health District does, and I know you've got a lot of people there. I know that are even you've had to move around and are out of place and doing things that might not be their specialty right now, but you're continuing to do the case contact work and just the education. And like you say, it's not as bad around here. And well done so far. And again, the question is, where are you? And I look forward to talking to you again next week.
Thank you very much. Have a great weekend, Ted.
Dr. Donald Stern with the Rappahannock Area Health District. Thank you for listening. We'll see you Monday morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own, and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.